Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, with global bond yields starting to ease off and the sell-off in the fixed income space starting to also calm down just a touch, it seems that the start to the month of March has been a good one for equities for the most part. The STI today rising by 0.8% alongside most of the Asia-Pacific region. The Stock 600 up by about 1.8%, and futures on Wall Street all trading solidly in the green might hint at the possibility that the good times might resume for global stocks. But the question about whether or not valuations are too pricey remain and have been raised in more frequency in recent weeks. And there's also the question as to whether or not we might be seeing bubbles form across certain asset classes that could pop in a painful fashion should things go awry. Well, Olivier Diasser is the head of applied research for the Asia-Pacific region at Contigo, and he's with us today on Money FM 89.3 to talk about where they're seeing potential asset bubbles or market bubbles at the moment, and what could actually lead to some of these to actually pop in the future should the possibility be high. Mr. Diasser, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.3. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are in good health during these times. And welcome to the show, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Olivier, let's talk first about the number of about potential bubbles in financial markets. And everybody's really been talking about this possibility, not just in the last weeks, but even at the height of that market rally that we saw last year. Where are you seeing signs of these potential financial bubbles over there at Contigo? And what indicators are you tracking most closely to give you a sense as to where these bubbles might be forming, if they are?
We're definitely seeing signs of bubbles in several places. I mean, in the equity markets, you could look at valuations, for example, which are way above their 10-year, even 5-year median levels. The other thing that worries us a little bit is some of the concentration risk that we have. For example, if you take the FANGs, you know, the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google of this world, plus Microsoft, you've got over 30% of the S&P 500 and over 35% of the risk in those, you know, six stocks. So there is concentration risk there. That's also a bit worrisome. We've seen since the start of the year a lot of high volatile trades in small cap names. We've seen that since the start of the year, the Russell 2000 has outpaced the NASDAQ composite and the S&P 500 by the largest margin in decades. So there is a lot of speculation going on in small caps. I mean, if you want to speculate in large caps like Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon, there'll always be a buyer for them later on when you need to sell. But small caps are different. So, So that's a bubble that, if it bursts, is going to hurt a lot of people, right?
Right. And, you know, there are definite signs of potential bubbles, no doubt. But when you compare that to previous episodes of bubbles, how grave is the situation at the moment when you compare it to when these other bubbles happen these other bubble episodes happen in the past, Olivier?
So that's a very good point, right? So if for those of us who have been around since the late 90s, you know, some of the things that happened recently, like the GameStop saga and some of these other types of speculative moves, are reminiscent of the tech bubble of the late 90s, right? And that we all know how badly that ended. But two things have changed since that one. First, investors have gotten a lot more, you know, comfortable operating and buying in a bubble. And second, central banks have become a lot better at preventing those bubbles from bursting, or at least reflating them whenever they need to, right? They've been printing money for over a decade now and reinflating those speculative segments of the market, and it has worked, right? So from that point of view, investors may be thinking that it's not going to burst. The Fed is never going to let this burst, right? So we went from too big to fail to too big to burst.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, Olivier, we talk about these central banks, and in your note, you actually noted that central banks have gone from being essential backstops to becoming what's called greater fools. Explain what this is and why this may be detrimental to markets that perhaps might be getting a little too complacent about a Fed that might not let things fail.
So, you know, the theory of the greater fool is that you will always be able to find a buyer for the stocks that you own who thinks they're worth more than what you paid for, right? And that person would be called the greater fool. Now, the Fed stepped into that role openly when the pandemic started, simply because the amount of debt in the system that is triple B rated, which is the lowest segment of the investment grade market, is more than 50% of the total. So if you have downgrades because of the pandemic, because of the economic impact of lockdowns, they were afraid of a huge liquidity crisis as investors, institutional investors, have to sell these bonds because they're no longer allowed to hold them if they fall below triple B rating, right? So they stepped in and they started buying all these things. So now what you have is a situation where the credit risk of triple B bonds over treasuries has gradually fallen since they came in. They stepped in to buy these things. They're now back to pre-COVID levels. Same for the high yields. The high yields are even lower than they were back in February, the spreads on high yields. So what's happened now is the market has completely stopped to price in default risk for these assets, for these lower quality, lower rated assets, because the Fed keeps buying them. But as we know, the economy isn't recovering yet. It's on a slow recovery path, and that path is still uncertain. And defaults are still, and bankruptcies are still possible, very much so. But yet it is not priced into the bond market right now.
And in fact, Olivier, I did want to get your thoughts on that recent rise in Treasury yields that really captivated markets over the last two weeks. It's been a while since I've seen, actually, a 10-year yield rise by about 40 basis points over the course of 1 month. These steepening yield curves and higher inflation expectations now, how does this factor into some of these things that Contigo is tracking with regards to these asset bubbles? How do you think this plays a part, if it does play a part, into perhaps exacerbating some of the situation at the moment with regards to market sentiment, some of these risk distortions? Share with us your thoughts, sir.
So, fundamentally, sometimes reflation, today's reflation exercise can turn into tomorrow's inflation, crisis. And that's what investors keep in the back of their mind. Back in 2017, when after 10 years of QE program, inflation started to rise in the U.S., the Fed had no choice but to start their tapering program, which, again, sent bond yields up very sharply. And then they came down when we had the crisis because they've been printing money and keeping interest rate low since then. But having done all of that, they've increased both money supply. So M2 has gone up by 26% in the last 12 months. And that's before this $1.9 trillion package we're negotiating in the Senate this week. That's huge, 26% in the last 12 months. Versus an average of about less than 6% for the past 10 years. So a huge amount of liquidity has been injected in the system. It doesn't have a lot of places to go, right? We still can't travel, can't attend soccer matches and things like that. So it's very concentrated on a few purchases. People are going to take their $1.9 trillion stimulus check and give it back to Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. It's going to go back to the same place so far. So there's a lot of potential for inflation to start when you have so much liquidity chasing so few goods.
We're speaking to Mr. Olivier Desailles, the head of applied research at APAC at Contigo. Now, Olivier, I do want to talk to you about the potential of this bubble and the worst case scenario if it does burst. If the bubble were to burst, where might we see it happen? Now, tech stocks are a leading candidate. We've seen some of these valuations start to be questioned and signs of the Nasdaq pulling back in recent weeks. But are there other areas of bubble distress that Contigo might be monitoring as a potential place where this thing might pop?
So for the bubble to pop, really, the interest rates have to rise. So your funding costs have to rise, and the economy has to stay weak so that the cash flows that you get from your business don't allow you to cover the debt that you have. That's one of the biggest, prickling things out there. And the Fed has been pretty adamant at saying, look, we're not going to raise rates. We don't care about inflation right now. We want to see it above our target for a prolonged period. We care about full employment. So I think the investors have gotten the hint that, okay, interest rates are going to stay low and you're not going to prick that bubble, but let's watch unemployment numbers. So unemployment numbers, like the ones that are coming out this Friday, are going to have a bigger and bigger impact on financial markets as people try to second guess what the Fed is thinking when they come out, right? Too strong an unemployment number, panic will come and you'll get another 40 basis point rise in treasury yields. If it's benign or slow growth in employment, they'll think that the Fed is still going to be accommodative and stimulative. And $1.9 trillion is coming from the Biden administration. So why not just stay invested?
Mm-hmm. Olivia, I do want to, as we know, the dot-com boom of the late 90s, early 2000s ended in a very painful bust that caught a lot of investors with their pants down. If we do start to see this bubble continue to burst, how dramatic might it be? And more importantly, what do you think investors can do, actually, should we see a bubble burst in such a painful fashion as we've seen in the previous episodes?
There is some good news on that front. When we look at the tech bubble bursting, most of the tech bubbles were, you know, they weren't making any money. They had zero earnings. They were small caps, and people were usually invested in them. Today, the tech sector is the biggest sector in the market. It's cash flow positive, in fact, highly profitable in the case of the FANGs, and a big chunk of the weight of most indices. So there will always be a buyer for these stocks, even if you have to wait a little bit. And that's one thing that's going to keep that downside risk low. But what we've seen since the start of the year, after the vaccine news came out, is this kind of rotation trade into small caps, non-technology small caps, which have driven up the Russell 2000. And those are obviously, a lot of them are in dire situation in terms of earnings or cash flow, and there's some risk there for sure.
Olivia Desserre, Head of Applied Research for the Asia-Pacific region at Contigo, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.3 to discuss the potential of bubbles bursting in financial markets. As always, I wish you and your loved one continued health and safety during these times, and we look forward to the next time you can join us on the show, sir. Meanwhile, have a great afternoon ahead, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.